listening to the Devoted Dreamers podcast, and I'm your host, Merit Onsa. I believe God has an unfolding plan for your life, a God-shaped dream just for you. But so much gets in the way, right? Fear, comparison, imposter syndrome. What if I mess this up? You are not alone in those feelings, and I'm so glad you're here for season 8. Keep listening to gain some transformational tools that will help you release the lies so that you can freely show up in the world, offering your gifts, leaning on God in your weaknesses, and serving His kingdom with the dream He's given you. Hello, Devoted Dreamer. Welcome to episode 191. I just have to pause for a second and acknowledge that number. I cannot believe we are 9 episodes away from the 200 episode mark. And I will be talking more about that in a couple of weeks, just to let you in on how we're going to celebrate that. And then a little break I'm going to take at the end of season 8 and leading into season 9. But for today, my interview is with Michaela O'Donnell. She's the founder and CEO of the boutique creative agency called Long Winter Media. She's also the senior director of the Dupree Center for Leadership at Fuller Seminary, where she builds programs, writes, and teaches on issues of vocation, work, and leadership. Michaela's first book, Make Work Matter, Your Guide to Meaningful Work in a Changing World, comes out later this year, and she and I have already discussed having her back in the fall to talk more about the book. But for today, if you haven't already come to this conclusion on your own, you need to know pursuing a God-shaped dream is very much a journey. I'm not sure I could even put my finger on a finish line to my dream if I wanted to. And now I know that could be discouraging, like to not know where this is going ultimately, but I'm not going to let that discourage me. And I urge you to proceed toward your dream in the same way, to enjoy the journey for what it is instead of hurrying it along. And Michaela and I talk about this very thing on today's episode. She is such a joy and an encouragement that God is at work in our dreams, that He is orchestrating minute details and huge undertakings for our good and His glory and honor. And as a result, we get to witness Him and His character on display through our journey, as long as we take the time to stop and pay attention and look for His presence in it. At the beginning of this conversation with Michaela, I'll share that I first met her here in Denver at a conference in November 2019. And honestly, I would love for you to have a chance to hear that entire message. It's a 2-parter, like 30 minutes each, maybe just a couple of videos that are available to you for free online through the Denver Institute for Faith and Work. So I'm going to link to those 2 videos in the show description and the show notes. So when you have a chunk of time, you can go back and listen to those at another time. I really think it's worthwhile to kind of hear her whole message. She drops in little bits of it here and there throughout this interview, but there's certainly not time to cover everything that she did at that conference. So for this episode, here is what you can look forward to from Michaela. 1, that your dream coming to life is likely going to take longer than you anticipate. And that is okay, but good to know on the front end, right? And it might just mean that you need to recalibrate your expectations. Okay, my takeaway 2 is the importance of reflecting along the way in this journey, just to kind of take the time to look back at what God is doing, what He's done, and what your reaction to that is, and kind of in conjunction with that, how important it is to process the grief that comes alongside failure. I, for one, really want to kind of move on quickly from things. And Michaela talks about just how valuable it is to just be able to sit in grief for a little while and acknowledge what happened, what maybe didn't go great, and then be able to move on. And then takeaway 3, listen for it at the end, Michaela's spirit of gratitude for whatever comes and how practicing gratefulness has shifted her heart and mind. I had so many weighty thoughts during and following this conversation. If you have space and time to do so, I pray you'll get a chance to experience this episode without a ton of distractions, maybe in a place where you can just sit and listen to all that we have to share. But if you don't have that, I don't want you to miss it altogether. So hang in there. Here is the interview with Michaela O'Donnell. Hello, Devoted Dreamers. Welcome to the podcast. I'm excited to bring to you today Michaela O'Donnell. And I met her back in November of 2019 at the Denver Institute of Faith and Work. They were doing a women's conference they do annually called Women, Work, and Calling. And Michaela was the keynote speaker. And I just kind of fangirled over her a little bit, just her research and her thinking on the topics of vocation and meaning and innovative leadership, practical theology. And our kids are similar ages, so I feel like there was a connection there as well. And so just walked right up to her and said, hey, I'd love to have you on the podcast. And 15 months later in a pandemic, here we are. Michaela, welcome.
Oh, thanks so much for having me, Mara. And you are like the world's most gracious host. The reason we were meeting 15 months later is because I kept postponing. So I could not be more delighted to be with you today. And you're right. What a 15 months it's been. It feels like it's been 20 years since we first met in Denver in 2019.
Totally. Oh my gosh. I know. I was trying to even envision like, what did that room look like? And then I watched your video again today. And I was like, oh yeah. Okay. Yeah. That's where we were. So anyway, listener, I am thrilled, like I said, to have Michaela here. And, you know, I always start with this question of your God-shaped dream, and we could go a million directions with it. So maybe let's just have you answer that and we'll see where the conversation goes. What is your God-shaped dream?
Mara, this is like the best question somebody has asked me in a long time. I have been thinking about it and perhaps to report that I feel like I have several of these, and maybe that's because I'm an Enneagram 7 and we like are enthusiastic about many things. But in this season, and this actually goes into kind of my sense of how God works with calling and seasons and phases. But in this season, it really feels like God's inviting me to help other people make meaning, like find purpose amidst all the change that's happening. So it's not just, oh, let me find meaning, let me find my passion, let me figure out who I am. It's like, oh, the world has flipped upside down. And the pandemic certainly has accelerated that, but there's a lot of things that were already in motion, a lot of change that was already happening. And mostly that's like really overwhelming for people. And so trying to find like our bearings and trying to still do that very human thing of finding meaning. That is currently what I feel like I've got my eyes fixed on. That comes out really specifically in like the realm of work and vocation. So I'm like trying to help people find meaning in their work in a changing world.
So important. I mean, this is why I'm like, please come on the podcast. Like, and I think the pandemic has kind of, I don't know, intensified this for us. And, you know, I know women have paid a huge price with their work, whether inside or outside the home, and with having kids, schooling, and all the whiplash back and forth of all of that. And so I think this is a really important time to be having this conversation. This episode's going to come out like basically a year after a lot of places in our nation locked down. And so how do we find our way forward, you know, in a meaningful way, not just in a reactionary way to what we've just experienced? So I'm grateful to get to talk to you about this. So talk about like, what does that look like for you? Like, what's been your journey to even get to this place of figuring out like, I'm passionate about this?
Okay, great question. I'll catch you up. And then you're right. COVID accelerates everything for all of us, including me. And I'm with you just as an aside, like, I mean, the data on like the effects of women in particular, because of the pandemic, like even just like the rates that women are leaving their workforce, or the like double or tripling of mental load because women are, you know, doing the education thing. I mean, it is just so intense. And I certainly feel those things too. Like I feel very, so all of those issues feel very near to me. So how did I get here? Let's see. Back in 2010, so about a decade ago, my husband and I were both in seminary. We were doing, we had just met, and he was graduating and I was a year behind him, and we got married and I graduated seminary all in a little short window. And we were living in LA, and Merritt, I think you know this about me. If you remember back to the time when we first talked and when you first heard me, but we were there and like literally like we're having to pay our rent. Like this is like getting very real. It's not about having a job we like. It's not about doing things we like. We just need to be able to pay the rent, right? And nobody was hiring. Nobody was hiring for people with theology degrees. As it turns out, like our theology degrees were not very marketable at all in a depressed economy. And we found ourselves fast. Like, what are we going to do? And that, you know, I'm kind of making light of it right now, but like, it was actually really tough. You can imagine like literally how are we going to pay our rent? And I come from
LA.
Yeah. So not cheap rent, Right. And, I come from a family of teachers and like entrepreneurs. That's like what we do. Big Irish Catholic families in the Midwest. And it's just like my instincts in a moment like that, I was like, we got to start a business. That's how we're going to solve this problem. And my husband's a great sport. So he said, okay. And he's been an artist all of his life, and he's like really good at things like film and graphic design. And I think we can make a business around that. I think we could do that. And so we did that. We started a business. We sent out an email to friends and family. Hey, we're open for business. And it turns out we were pretty cheap because we didn't have a lot of other expenses. So people were willing to hire us. Also people were just, you know, believed in us. So we did that, and we kind of had our business, and it was getting us by on our basic expenses. And, you know, Merritt, I had thought like after doing my master's that I would go back to do a PhD, but here I was finally making money and making enough to pay the bills, growing a business. And I'm like, why would I go back and get a PhD in theology, something that you can't get a job with afterwards? And at that time, I had a couple of mentors like really encourage me. Like they were like, you know, Michaela, we just really feel like, actually, we feel like give gifts to the church, you know, big C church, widest expression of that church. And so I went and did a PhD initially, maybe as like a favor to my mentor, which speaks to how like neurotic maybe I am. But partway into my degree program, I found myself just like loving having some space to answer the very questions that were like behind that story I just told you about Dan and I. And so when I got time to do my dissertation research, I decided to take up like vocation in a changing world. I wanted to know, okay, that was kind of a whole hot mess, that thing that Dan and I did. And we felt really alone in that. And we didn't know what to do. And it turns out, not no fault, but like our schooling didn't prepare us for it. And yet we were tapping into creativity and resiliency and having to build relationships, these things that feel very, very core to the Christian story. And so I thought to myself, I wonder if like how the church could be helpful to people who are out there trying to make their way in work in a changing world. So that's the research I did. And that research ended up connecting me with the Dupree Center for Leadership at Fuller Seminary, where after I finished my degree, I came with the charge of taking that research and converting it into resources for like real people. Resources, everything from programs to workshops to events to, you know, writing, just the whole gambit of the kind of resources. And so that's what I've been up to. I've been up to trying to like, and of course, all those people have taught me a bunch more than I ever knew based on just the research alone. And so one of the main ways I spend my time now is helping people sort through that same thing that I felt like I was sorting through a decade ago. And in many ways, I'm still sorting through because the world's changing so much. But everybody's undergoing some sort of transition right now, whether it's like big giant stuff, like I lost my job, or oh, I like, not that it's small, but oh, I don't get to send my kids to physical school anymore. I mean, it's actually far from small, but there's all, just everybody everywhere is navigating transition. And so having space to like make sense of what's happening is perhaps more crucial than ever.
Yeah. I mean, I've even encountered it. I don't know any data on this, but it seems like people are like picking up and moving too. Like, I'm going to go live somewhere else. I'm going to go live closer to family or further from family, depending on maybe your situation. I don't know, but like that, I'm surprised at like, this has really brought to mind, like it's shift time. Like everything's shifted. So let's keep it rolling and figure out the path ahead from here when things look so different. You're doing this work with the Dupree Center. Talk about what, like some of those, well, some of what you learned and then how you're implementing some of that there.
Well, I think it goes back to what you just said. Like, you're right. Nothing is really a given right now for people. So things that wouldn't have been on the table because we're just doing our daily lives 2 years ago are now on the table. And you're right. I don't have the data on it either, but just anecdotally, I'm like, how many people do I know that have moved in the last 12 months who are moving? And we live in Los Angeles. And so that feels even more pronounced because people the COVID restrictions are quite, I'll say intense here. And I don't mean that as a political statement. It's just like, we can't really do much here in LA.
Right.
And
just
so it's just a reality. So people feel this even more. So you see people like, I don't want to do that anymore. I want to change. I mean, I've seen more people question the relationships they're in this year. I have more like divorces than normal. Cause it's like, oh, wait a minute. I'm like with this person and we can't avoid the stuff that we were avoiding, right? It's right there. And so, you know, one thing that I say to people, the Road Ahead is the program that is sort of the flagship thing that we're doing. And it's all about, you know, discerning like the season that you're in and discerning next steps on the road ahead and doing that work. And one thing I say to everybody on the first week of our 6-week session is I say, you're here to do the work you need to do. And we're here to help you figure out how to do that work. We've got a process and we've got all these exercises and like, we've taken care of all those logistics, but like there is work that you need to do. And that's pretty true for us as humans all the time. That's certainly true, I think, in my own life. Like when I'm ignoring that work, I become like a less cool person to be around. I become a little bit snappier of a boss. I become a little bit grouchier of a mom. And so just the big thing I'm learning is like, we need the space. And because of all these external things that are coming and some of the big decisions that we're contemplating doing amidst all the big external changes, like we need the space and space just to, sometimes I say we just need space to talk to ourselves. We trust that God is there. We trust that God is talking back. There's other people along for the journey. But the thing we don't do sometimes is like, just talk to ourselves, listen to ourselves, wonder about why we have this thought on loop 37 times or why we feel a certain way when something comes up. And so that's the biggest thing I'm learning right now. I mean, I can talk more about, you know, things we've learned along the way, but right now it's like, we just need the space.
Yeah. That reminds me just of the piece where you talked in your session, in 2019 about reflection and how important it is that we reflect on the risks that we've taken, the things that we've said yes to, and then learn from that. And that is not natural to me. I so know that I need that, but it's like, I am on to the next thing, you know?
Yeah.
So yeah, definitely a real need.
I think for women. So the process we take people through, week one is like your story, God's calling. Week two is like, what are you longing for? Week three is empathy. Then in week four, imagination. Then we get to the risk that you just named, and finally reflection. And one of the big things that we hear, I've heard from a lot of women, and it happens in the empathy week, because in the empathy week, we say, like, this week is all about moving towards somebody in light of whatever longing came up, whatever. And we do all these exercises to get at people's longings. We say, why don't you move towards someone this week? We have people go through this brainstorming exercise and they kind of list out their people. And then as they're doing that list, it's on Zoom, so we've got cameras turned off. We say, oh, by the way, you can move towards yourself. If you need to move towards yourself, like, you can move towards yourself. And there's like this, even with muted Zoom cameras and audio, you can feel an exhale across time zones. Because what happens as women is, like, we're not often set up to, I'll say, to like have that space to move towards ourselves, to have that space to reflect, to have the space to make sense of all that has and is happening. So you're right. It can be hard to get there, and all the more reason to find good people who will help you make that space, and just to feel that permission that, wait a minute, moving towards myself is a holy act. That's sacred. That's good. That's, God loves that.
Yeah. If we don't take time to like listen to what's going on inside, it's like that all gets bottled up and becomes baggage later.
For sure.
Yeah.
Well, I want to ask about, you're kind of like well on this journey, but where have there been some places for you in, you know, whether it's going into your PhD or pursuing that research or doing what you're doing right now, like, what fears or struggles have come up for you? What's been like the things that you've had to push through to keep going?
I'm so glad you asked that question. I think this is a daily thing for me. So it can be easy to look at each other and think, like, goodness, she's got it all together. Goodness, look what she's done. And then we look at ourselves and we're like, why can't I X, Y, and Z? I should be able to. So I certainly, like, I have those loops that play in my head too. I am an Enneagram 7, wing 8. So part of the beauty of that is that I like lots of, I'm enthusiastic about a lot of different things. And one of the drawbacks of being enthusiastic about a lot of different things is, it's hard to like move a lot of things forward well at the same time. And so sometimes it means that I'm like doing things like, I'm like, oh, that was like kind of messy, or, oh, that wasn't as refined, or, oh, I wish I had really shown up in that thing I created with some more precision, or I wish I had been more perfect. And so like allowing grace, and then also just like knowing what to commit to and what not to commit to for sure. But, and the other thing about Enneagram 7s is like, my instincts are to avoid pain. And so like, I don't want to hear it. Like, somebody tells me I didn't do a good job. Somebody tells me they don't like the thing we did. I like feel so sad. And I don't, it's not just that I feel sad, it's that I don't want to feel sad. It's hard for me to feel sad. It's hard for me to feel pain. And so the learning lessons have come along the way, and not just dealing with what sadness brings or dealing with pain, but in letting God do the work to ask, why is it so hard to deal with pain? Why is it so hard to be sad? Why is that a thing? Because when I don't deal with that, like, my work doesn't move forward as fast. It's not as helpful. It's not as generative. I can't invite people into it as easily. A lot of it comes back to what I've learned are from the pitfalls of, okay, things they're not moving in the way I wish. And that's because I'm retreating inward. Not in the healthy, oh, I'm doing some good reflection kind of way, but in the, I don't want people to see this part. I don't want to be this vulnerable, right? So that's a big thing I've learned along the way. The other thing I would say is, you know, one of my husband's mentors early on, this is a decade ago, it was his first internship in film. And he said to my husband, like, it's going to take you a decade to get where you think you should be today. And mostly that just felt like a punch in the gut. Like, that sounds like a long time. And a decade later, like, that guy was razor accurate, both with Dan and also with me. And I think there's this myth that it's easy for me to embody, and for, I think for a lot of us and for women, it, just because we sense it and just because we feel it doesn't mean it happens right away and doesn't mean it happens at once. And that I can get a little frustrated in that process. I can get a little impatient in that process. I can get a little, I think I'm in charge in that process. And that's where some of the work, actually some of the most fruitful and generative work that I think God's done in my own, like, kind of personal sense of formation, is that waiting, is that, hey, you're not in charge. Hey, when things happen, remember this is me. Like, hey, remember that be still and know that I am God business. I'm serious about that. So lots of, and those are like things I'm, you know, haven't dealt with since, like, oh, this morning. So it's not like those are like long time ago lessons. Those are my current stuff.
Oh my gosh. I'm just laughing over here. it's so true. And yeah, to have somebody say to you, what you want right now is 10 years away. That feels really hard, really hard. And for sure, like, failure between here and there and missteps and starting over. And it's so hard to envision, like, all the teeny tiny little things that needed to happen for you to jump that decade. You know, the time still flies or flows by. But yeah, so, I mean, are there some things along the way that you're like, oh, I wish I'd done that differently, it might have sped it up? Or have you, can you get back to that, like, okay, be still, the Lord has a plan, there's a reason it's taking this long?
I love that question. I think the first part is like recalibrating our expectations. Mm-hmm. Like, you know, I don't know why I think things need to happen so fast. Maybe that's influenced by the fact that I can order like food and groceries to my door in 5 minutes. I mean, I'm not blaming it on, you know, capitalism, but
right.
there's parts of my life that come so fast and come all at once, and that I don't have to till toward, right? Like, I don't have to do those things. So I think partly it's just this recalibrating expectations of healthy pace of life. The other thing is, like, you know, I'm not a person who's like just doing one thing professionally. I've got kids, I own a business. You know, there's just lots, and those things, in their very best sense, they feed into one another and they make they're integrated. They make each other better, but they might make me a little like slower overall, as if I just had a razor sharp focus. Like I'm, and that's the reality. And I think that's how I'm built. I'm built as a synthesizer. I'm built as a person, you know, like, I like to make meaning. That's synthesis. So I think it's a recalibrating expectation, understanding how I'm made. And then, yeah, like, sometimes I feel like I just didn't learn the lesson the first 5 times. And honestly, like, I feel like it's God's grace that, like, God kept working with me until I learned that lesson. So would I go back and, like, embody a little more calmness or peace? Like, I would certainly do that. There's certainly some things. Would I, you know, listen to some other people faster on certain projects? Like, yeah, absolutely I would. So, you know, there's fruit to be gathered from the failures, and that's absolutely, you've got to kind of fail your way forward. But failure also, like, it's hard. It's not just this, like, you know, this kind of, you know, external thing that we do, and we're failing fast, failing forward. It's like, well, when we put our, like, energy and time into whatever it is, like, we care about it. And so the failures, like, I think there's some grief work to be done there. And some of my regrets are skipping past the grief work, because when you skip past the grief work, I think that the stuff shows up. For me, my stuff shows up again next time. And that's what I haven't learned the lesson. And because pain is so hard for me, grief is often my lesson and has been a lesson for a while. So we're all different in that way, right? That, and I don't mean that other people's lesson isn't also grief, but it's a long-term lesson for me. Grieving well, grieving slowly, grieving with eyes wide open, and for the sake of, you know, all that comes on the backside of good grief. So yeah, I would do a bunch differently, and I've learned the things along the way, but I also do kind of trust the process.
Yeah. Would you say that the grieving happens best in relationship, like that if you can bring other people along, that the reflection happens maybe more quickly, or at least I'm like a verbal processor, I think. So I don't know, what does that look like for you?
I'm so glad you asked that. So I think there's two aspects. One is like when I bring other people along, to use your phrase. So that's like when I invite people in, right? And oh yeah, it's like pretty much always better. Now that's interesting, because it's like, well, if you're talking about professional grief, where does that go? I don't know that we always have places for our professional grief, right? Like, it's like, well, does that go at work, or does that go with my boss, or does that go with my spouse or my friends or my family? Like, it's not as obvious. That goes with my small group at church, right? So it's just, so there's these spaces and you in a process of figuring out who might I invite into that. And like, yeah, like I'm picturing their four faces in my mind right now. They just have the same conversation 18 times with me and like still love me. And that is like the beautiful gift of loving relationships. But then there's the other kind of people, which is like, okay, maybe I'm not inviting you in on my stuff, but maybe I'm subjecting myself to your expertise, your process, your wisdom, your experience, your like difference of worldview or opinion or, you know, way of moving through a Tuesday. And that's pretty important too, because I think that's a good reminder, and that comes in all forms. Like, who am I listening to? Who am I asking good questions of? Who am I learning from? Not necessarily about like these projects or my work, but they're informing those things. And I think that's really important, because it's a good reminder that like, maybe I don't like hold all the reins I think I hold. Maybe I'm not holding the steering wheel. God's at work. Oh yeah, look at these people. Oh, look what God's doing over there. Oh my goodness, that's inspiring, encouraging. And how might I just jump in with what's already happening and not have to have my own thing over here? So there's different kinds of, I think, ways that people get in there with us. But yeah, inviting people in, and I was just having a conversation with somebody else this morning about like, just the sacredness of trusted relationships. Like, that really is such a sacred thing. And trust is built in all kinds of ways. And I was having to reflect on how those trusting relationships have been built in my life. And, you know, long-term relationships certainly is part of it. Just seeing each other enough through the seasons. In a work environment, there's it's just kind of like clarity and candor and how those help fuel trust, right? And then you can have some of these formative conversations because you've got clear expectations and clear divisions of labor and clear goals. Like, just one of those things that feel quite technical that actually are rather relational. So yeah, people are everything. People are the whole shebang, if you will.
Yeah, I think we can easily get way too caught up in the voices in our head that may not always be ones we should listen to. Will you talk about any kind of spiritual disciplines or scripture, or anything that's been, you know, teaching you or a comfort to you as you've been on this road?
So one of the, I'll go big framework all the way down to just like daily stuff. So one of the big frameworks that I've settled into is this idea of like a day by day on the way, theology of calling. It's just like day by day on the way. And the Exodus story of manna from heaven is like where the like day by day, like, I really am like a visualize that. I visualize people collecting food each morning and translate that over to like the grace that God has for me and for you and for us each morning. And that no matter how hard I try, I can't store up more grace than I need for just a day. Right. And there's like this thing that's happening. So it's like day by day nature. And how does that like very specifically play out? I would say, how does this specifically play out? It's prayer. Like prayer is, it just feels like that day by day prayer, that day by day, just communication channel. I have really loved, I feel like more people are doing like breath prayers and like liturgical prayers. You know, you inhale, like you sort of inhale one thing and exhale another. You inhale abundant love and you exhale like the feelings of being not enough, right? And just sort of going in and out and in and out. So those breath prayers help me feel that day by day, just enough for each morning kind of grace. And then the on the way theology, like I do feel like it's not just that like we're all in this fixed location, you know, sort of collecting manna for the day. I do think that like God's got us in motion. And I do think that there is an on the wayness and, you know, and I love it. And one of the reasons why I named this process Road Ahead is I just feel like there's so many beautiful road stories in the Bible. And the one that I feel like very, very saturated in actually the last couple of years, it's interesting, is the story of the Good Samaritan. And I just like keep coming back to it, Merritt. And, you know, I keep working it through with people. And like every time I'm in it, people teach me something new about the story that helps me understand the on the wayness of God and the on the wayness of life and the on the wayness of my own role in all of that. So prayer and scripture is like what I'm coming back to, but like with people and on a daily basis and in these little itsy bits, right? That's what anchors my big, as you say so eloquently, God-sized dreams, or these like itty bitty little steps.
I don't know if this happened to anyone listening, but when you were talking about inhale and exhale, I was like it just actually naturally happened in my body. And I felt something in that, like just letting go of just the intensity of the, even the moment as we're sitting here talking. But that's really helpful. I loved hearing you talk about the Good Samaritan story at that conference. And I don't know, maybe we'll have you come into my Facebook group and share a little bit on that maybe in a couple months.
I love it.
The fall or something. Because you have a book coming out. Can you talk a little bit about that?
Yeah.
Is it too soon?
Thanks for asking. No, I'll tell you, I'll give you the like preview of coming attractions.
Okay.
The book is called Make Work Matter: Your Guide to Meaningful Work in a Changing World. And maybe I'll tell you about it from sort of a sideways in, like have a full conversation about it at some point. Whenever you're doing I just got the cover design for it. We just went through the process of doing the cover, and the cover is beautiful. The team that worked on it, like they just did a beautiful job. And I love visuals. I run a branding agency. Like I love visuals. And there's this like textile bit that's on the front. And I was like, what is this? Like, what is this? Where'd you get this art from? And they told me the artist's name, and they told like, or like maybe her last name. And then I like, you know, looked for her everywhere on the internet as one does in these ages. And I was really struck by her process, and her process she described as a work of call and response. And hoping to like turn the fragments and elements of this world into something that really matters and is beautiful. And I was like, that's it. That's the process of making work matter in a changing world. Of course, I've got all kinds of stories and method and research and all the things I do. But like, I was like, this is it. This image right here really is the whole process. So I would be glad to talk about that more in due time. But that's a little preview of coming attractions.
That's great. I love how you wove that story into, have you connected with the artist?
No. I haven't. No, that's why I won't even share her name yet. So this is just my, my fangirl, girling her.
Yeah. Yeah. Oh, I love that. I love how God kind of makes those connections and pieces things together where we're not even trying. It's really beautiful. Well, I do think, Michaela, we need to continue the conversation and probably do that closer to when your book is coming out. So stay tuned for that, everyone who's listening. I just feel like there's such a richness in the work that you've done in your research and the groups that you're continuing to work with. And so, yeah, I look forward to staying connected to you and sharing what I'm learning and what you're learning with the listeners. I'd love to have you just finish and wrap up our conversation with a little bit of reflection on how you've seen God transform you, I guess in the last decade or so, from where you were when you kind of launched into this, you know, I don't know if I should have a PhD, to where he has you today. What has he done in you?
Yeah, and thanks for the invitation to just reflect. And it's, you know, it's so fun to be with you, Mary. I feel like you and I could talk for a long time. So thanks for having me. And I'll look forward to coming back again. The question of transformation is such a good one. I think I'll name two things. In my humanness, for better and worse, can get like so excited about my own ideas. And I can feel sometimes like I've gotten a word or a direction from God and I'm like, okay, cool. I've got it. Let's go. And I start running. And, you know, I think mostly God's built me to run. I think that's a healthy thing. But there are no small amount of times that I have found myself, I won't say out ahead of God. I'll say off on some other road. I don't know how I got there. It certainly God wasn't the one. In retrospect, God wasn't there. Or it wasn't there maybe in the fullest way I was looking for. Of course, God's always there. And that gentle, like, inviting me back to the road, inviting me back to the wide road of grace, if you will, like, has been such a humbling process. Like, I just feel like, oh, wow, like, we really do have a God who loves us and a shepherd who comes after us. And I can feel that. So like, I do feel like the humility thing it's probably a lifetime thing for me, but it feels pretty central. And sort of as a pair to that, like, I just feel grateful. I think I feel grateful a lot more often than I did a decade ago, than I did 5 years ago, even. I think I can appreciate what it takes for humans to come around good work and good ideas. And I think I've had enough mishaps in, you know, normal things like friendships or whatever, projects not going my way, that I've come to like savor the when things, I'm like, wow, this is really a gift of God for this to be going well. Wow, this conversation with you where I feel energized and delighted, like, that's actually like a gift from God right here on this sunny day in LA. And so I think I walk through the world as a much more grateful person than I used to. And that gratitude is such a compelling compass for like whatever God has for me next. I'm like following the breadcrumbs of gratitude, trying to stay more humble as I'm looking for that day-by-day grace and manna in this season of my life and work.
Thanks for listening today. Don't let the conversation end here. Let's connect over in the Devoted Dreamers Insiders Group on Facebook. We're building a sweet community of dreamers so no one has to walk this road alone. You can find the group at bit.ly/dreamergroup. I'll see you in there.